Okay. Welcome everyone to the Arizona State Hospital Independent Oversight Committee. Today is March 17th, 2022, at 6:01 p.m. We have a met quorum. We have Kay, Melissa, Alice, myself, Chuck, and Ashley so far. I expect to get others to join as we go along. But before we get started, do we have, and that looks like Dee just joined. Dee, is that you?
Yep, that's me.
Okay. And before we get started, does anyone have a disclosure conflict of interest? Okay, none being heard, we'll move on. Has everyone been able to review the and approve the meeting minutes from last month?
Yes.
Okay, so is that a motion with Dee?
Of course.
Do we have a second?
Alice seconds it.
Okay, Alice, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay, so moved. Okay, next, do we have any update from ADOA? I will be off camera for a sec.
Good evening, Lori. I do not have any updates for the group. If there's any questions for me that I could try to answer or get an answer for the group, I'd be happy to fill those.
Okay, we may ask for some of your guidance as we move through our items. The first update from other IOCs. So the central IOC is running into some difficulties with one of the cases they're looking into. So I think they're going to start an escalation process. I think they requested policies from a certain provider. Remember, they have the privilege of overseeing lots of agencies, and one of them, they asked for their policies and procedures, and the agency said that they were confidential. And they were like, I think they were like, what are your rights? What are the grievance processes? It wasn't something people would think would be highly confidential. So just letting you know that's going on in the central IOC. The other update is, as you know, we started a subcommittee that we wanted to discuss the resolution group and whether that was really good for the patients. We had Jack's opinion that it wasn't, and also if it was violating any other HIPAA or anything else. So Jack is looking into that and investigating that for us. He sends his regrets that he couldn't join tonight, but he wanted me to pass on that he's looking into it, and we will try to schedule a subcommittee call. We tried a doodle, but we just didn't get a date that worked for everyone. So, and Natalie, I see that you're on, so I'll catch you up later on who's here and who isn't on the notes, so it'll be easier. Okay, review of action items. So the first that we had asked about a decision letter, and they said that they hadn't received a letter on the Sentinel event that occurred on October 31st. The hospital has not received a decision letter from Access. The letter to which the IOC chair referred to in February 17th was related to the other Sentinel event that occurred in March. So the first Sentinel event, they have not received anything yet, so I didn't see a decision letter. And in that Sentinel event, it was an accidental choking, not a suicide, and corrections have been made. Again, following up on the request for tablets for patient use in Davao, that ASH chief quality officer has contacted them, and they made a second submission requesting information, because they didn't hear back. Follow up on PET therapy. The first visit of Alliance of Therapy Dogs was conducted January 29th on the Forensic Campus, very successful, and they're going to visit or visited already on February 19th, scheduled to come back to Forensic on March 19th in a few days. So it seems like it's been successful, and the patients seem to enjoy that. Let's see. Our other one was that, you know, we've had multiple patients saying that their mail is delayed coming into the hospital. And they said they're closely monitoring both incoming and outgoing, noting that there's no mail delivery to or from the units on the weekends or holidays. And should be noted, there have been delays in the U.S. mail by USPS during the duration of COVID pandemic, which is out of ASHA's control. Next, motion for dimensions of separation. What did happen, we did have some progress on the administrative separation. We were permitted to go visit the room or rooms without the patient in there. And since Melissa knows a lot more about this than I do as an architect, do you want to give a debrief of our visit? So Larry and Melissa and I went yesterday. So this is hot off the press.
Sure. Yeah. Just like just said, Lori, we really appreciate that we were able to go see the species in person. It's really helpful to be able to see that. So we were toured by administration and then also by staff. Mm-hmm. And so we were able to see there's three spaces. It's more than that, but there was basically, like, you know, the patients, I'll say like bedroom, and then there's an anteroom and a restroom. And then there was also like an additional sort of corridor space and then room adjacent to that too, that the patient has access to. Mm-hmm. We were not able to see a seclusion room, you know, a formal seclusion room, right? We just saw the administrative mm-hmm. separation areas. You know, still, you know, it's still maybe operating similarly, I would say, to seclusion. It was probably originally designed for that, but that is, you know, that's just my opinion. Factually, though, what we observed, you know, the windows there in the rooms were shuttered, so there is no direct access to any like natural light or views or people. There is operationally free access to some of the other rooms I just mentioned, right? The additional sort of corridor and other sort of accessory room. But, you know, when I say free access, the way that that works is that the patient requests, you know, via intercom to have access to those rooms. And then staff allows the patient to access, you know, remotely using buttons to be able to go in there. The patient does have access to a phone there. Did discuss a lot about human contact. That was one of the questions, is, you know, how much human contact does the patient have? And it sounded like there was contact with staff, not other patients. However, you know, we didn't necessarily see that. Obviously, the patient wasn't in the room, so we didn't see it in operation. But just knowing that some of that access was done remotely too, it would be good to understand that a little bit better. But it was helpful to see. And then there was some other discussion about access to the exterior, and we did see also the exterior area in the yard where the patient could go. We also understand that the patient was choosing, I guess, fairly often not to utilize the outdoor area. But then we were, you know, we then wondered though, if being in the outdoor, as one example, would be helpful for treatment or well-being. You know, is there a way to encourage or enable some of those behaviors more? So I don't know, Lori, if you have anything you wanted to add, or Larry.
Yeah, I think that while we saw the area, and I think there was an emphasis on, it was much more spacious than seclusion, but we didn't see seclusion. We saw separation. Mm-hmm. We still had the same human rights concerns that keeping someone in a room without natural light, with fluorescent lights, you know, there was mention that a person sometimes uses a computer room till all hours of the night. I'm like, well, if you don't see the sunlight, you know, it's hard to get your clock set, you know, your biological clock set. So 3 a.m. might as well be 3 p.m. We still are concerned that someone would spend an extended period of time, weeks, months, years, in a very little contact with others, and then be ready for release into the community. And we expressed concern that we didn't feel that it was very therapeutic, in our opinion, and we're not practitioners, but on all the information that's written on torture and seclusion and isolation and prisons and everywhere else, we're still concerned. So I think that was about it, right, Melissa? I mean, we wish that they would take a more proactive approach in encouraging the person to go outside, since it could break up that monotony. And the person is in the hospital for behavioral health issues, so you know, we'd hope that they would work with him, try to engage and encourage. I think that's about it as far as our admin separation. The other thing they responded to us, why are people getting written up for IRs? And again, they have a uniform policy for identifying and reporting all significant, unusual, irregular activities which may affect the welfare, security, operations, require the attention of various supervisory offices. So for them, anytime they hear patients talking about anything they deem would be of interest, they said safety, welfare, security, operations. I think all of us understand the reason for that. I think our concerns were more related to if someone was talking to someone else about their own legal situation, why should they write an incident report on that? If they're not talking about, we're suing the hospital, you know, maybe that is of concern, but not, here's what my lawyer is saying about my particular case and my PSRB or whatever it happens to be. So any thoughts on that?
Hi, this is Dee. So I read through that. I didn't pick it apart, but I didn't like some of what I saw. I think that it's vague enough that it kind of leaves a lot to be said about what some of the definitions of certain words in the significant physical changes or findings in a patient. Like, that's pretty vague to me. And just exactly what you were saying. So, you know, when in my experience, I'm sure, you know, Alice would agree that typically, you know, conversations between two other people have nothing to do with anything that goes into an incident report. These are concerned, you know, activities that require investigation, not to be used, you know, they're not used against people. In fact, frequently, like we said before, they aren't even a part of the main chart. So I don't know. I don't know what Alice's opinion on that was, but I was just like, okay.
Yeah,
a lot of them made sense, but
I don't understand why that would warrant an incident report. But yeah, it just seems to me that it's kind of a strange retaliatory tool in order to keep them quiet.
Mm-hmm. Well, funny, retaliation is mentioned in here at some point, which I thought, I actually kind of chuckled when I read that. I know it's not funny, but retaliation for submitting complaints to authorities.
Yes.
That's in there. Anyway, I don't want to, you know, drag this on, but I do think that some of the verbiage in here is too vague. And I think they could twist that into whatever they wanted to.
I agree. This is Kay on the phone. And I have some deeper concerns than this because, like, some of the patients in here are not coherent enough to know what their legal rights are, and they don't understand. Do you know what I mean? And some of us can't afford attorneys. I'm not one of them, but, you know, some people in here can't afford attorneys. So a lot of the patients here get their legal advice from other patients. I don't understand how this is even a reasonable response to having legal discussions amongst our peers.
There should be nothing wrong with that as far as I know. That does not make sense. And just as Kay just said, you know, some people, first of all, you know, what state of mind they're in, no matter what, don't understand the law. And then some people really aren't in a state of mind to understand the law. So I don't see anything wrong with them asking questions of each other or discussing things together. I just don't.
Yeah, and not only that, they may not even understand that it's a problem for anybody. Staff shouldn't be listening in on their conversations anyway. That's kind of inappropriate to do that and then come back on somebody. It'd just be like, you know, the fly on the wall at your house and you say something and then they buzz off and, you know, somehow get you in trouble for it. That doesn't seem right.
I think towards the end of the forensic forum, I think we were talking to Jackie and Lisa about that, you know, like, don't they have a right to have a private conversation with another patient? I mean, it's one thing, let's lay it on the table. They're not planning anything retaliatory. They're not planning to charge a nursing station or anything like that. They're just, can't they have a conversation? And they said, yes. I think they just have to ask the person or the staff if they're getting too close to please give them some space. So that would be something that, I think I asked Jackie at that time, someone was standing there with me. I said, well, could you tell the patients this? Could you actually communicate that they do have the right to have private conversations as long as they're not of, you know, a problem topic like, you know, they're planning escape or something, you know, as long as it's a normal conversation that they could ask the person to please give them space. And I think Jackie said yes.
I think I was with you.
Okay.
We had discussed this topic. And the answer from the administration about this is, well, we can't tell that they're not planning to do something that we don't want them to do unless we listen in on them. And that's their answer to why they should not be allowed to have so-called private conversations. Of course, that is a very flimsy defense against the loss of privacy that they're doing. And I think really it goes back to the very basics that we started this conversation about, which is really it's all about control and intimidation. That's my take.
Yeah, I could see how this is, you know, now this is going to affect these patients in a deteriorating way because now they can't feel like they can say anything around anybody because, you know, I mean, if things aren't bad enough that they're in there and they're isolated from their families and the outside world, like my son went out on an outing today and he said, oh my God, things have really changed in the last couple of years since the last time he was out on an outing. He says, it doesn't seem fair. And then you put some of these other stressors on top of these patients, and it's just not right. I'm sorry, but I guess it doesn't really matter what I think, but I don't feel like it's right.
Yeah, I know we've heard about it on patient calls also that, and we talked to a civil patient and a few forensic patients this last about a week ago. And one of the first things the civil patient told us was that they know for a fact that they're listening in on calls, and we've been told that they do not do that. Now, I've heard from others that sometimes there's information that they had to be obtained, but how do we know whether it's not someone hearing the conversation or whether it's listening? We've been told that they do not listen on the phone lines.
Well, I won't divulge too much information, but I know for a fact this is D. I know for a fact because there was somebody from security who said they do.
Well, do we have a motion to ask them to really clarify since we're getting different mixed messages from employees?
Security.
Okay. So who wants to make the motion and who would like to second it?
I'll make the motion that we should ask administration to clarify the policy by which members of the employees of ASH who are taking care of the patients there on the forensic or on any side for that matter, what is their policy about giving people the right to have a conversation with each other without being overheard? And if, as we were saying earlier, it requires that one of those patients say to a staff member, I'm going to have a private conversation with this other person and I don't want you standing nearby, would he be able to do that without getting retaliated against?
Well, I think we're also talking about phone calls. Yeah. And that's where the problem lies, is that how do you prove that? And I think that, you know, in the state of Arizona, they're not legally required to tell the patients if they're listening in on their calls or recording them. But, you know, everybody else, even the jails and the prisons, have the decency to do that. And it seems to me that they should have to be able to do the same thing, although I get the law is on their side, but it's not right. And I will second the motion, Dr. Potts.
Okay. So that will be moved. I think we also would like to add in that, if I could amend a little bit, I think they always have the right for private conversations with their lawyer and legal. I think that they cannot do that. So I want to make sure they clarify that bit as well, that they, I think that was D, Natalie.
It was. It. Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
So I want a motion that they would like, we'd like to know that they do permit patients legal discussions with legal counsel, whether it's on the phone or in person, without hearing, taping, recording of any type. And I know, Ashley, you probably know a lot more about this than the rest of us.
Yeah, and I mean, I would be surprised if legal calls were recorded. That's not my understanding of how things operate, just by the attorneys I know that represent clients in ASH. So, I mean, yeah, might as well ask for some clarification.
Okay.
Yeah, I know that my son's attorney will call sometimes, and I said, are you, you know, doing a legal, you know, letting them know that you're an attorney? And sometimes he's like, well, sometimes they don't, because it takes too much time for them to, I don't know what the process is, but he said sometimes he doesn't. And I was thinking, oh, okay, well, I mean, I guess we don't have anything to hide, but I mean, who knows?
Okay. So that was just on their follow-up to us, and we'll continue. Oh, all in favor of the two motions, mm-hmm. one that Chuck asked and my follow-up about the legal and specific?
Aye.
So moved.
But I think they're going to lie. Just heads up. I mean, we can ask.
The other thing, we had quite a few people that went to the forensic forum, but I have a note to listen to myself with others that were at the forensic forum, kind of give a rundown of the biggest issues are. Because, again, a lot of times what I take away is that it's like going to a community meeting, like you would in any community. Most of the issues are related to living amongst others, right? having choices. So anyone that was there, would you like to start? I'll jump in at the end.
It's Barb. One of the patients said that they couldn't get two witnesses for a notary, which cost $10. So he had to pay like $150 more. And he noted that most patients don't have the money to do that. So one of the questions was how do patients get their court documents handled? And there's no notary at the hospital. And there's a difference between getting a notary for a hospital versus a non-hospital issue. Lisa said that that it's hospital versus personal issues that they want notarized. And the question was raised, why doesn't ASH pay for a staff member to become a notary? And I didn't get a clear answer on that. All I have is that Lisa said that they need to work on communication.
Because I think
they were wondering,
had scheduled and had paid money, and then because of staffing shortages or anything, other activities or lack of communication, the patients are out $120 or whatever it was, and then the notaries are turned back because they have to pay $75 each for a witness, and hospital employees and workers cannot be witnesses for a lot of things.
They wouldn't allow the hospital. Yeah, I've never worked at a hospital that didn't have a notary. I've never heard that ever happening. I don't understand that at all, but I'm sure that you could find somebody who would be willing to volunteer their time to come in and do this for these patients. I might even know somebody up in the area, but I couldn't guarantee that. But
we could ask if they would do that. Even if we found someone, would they allow it?
So I wonder if they would. At Community Bridges, we've got notaries. We have different staff members that are notaries, as well as actually employed notaries that will go to different locations for petitions, court documents, all those things. And sometimes we have patients that are there for a couple of months waiting for placement at ASH. A lot of our people are court ordered treatment. So we need notaries. I'm confounded again.
Can they hire a notary, or would they allow a volunteer to come in?
I motion it.
I'll
second that motion.
Well, I want to interject for a minute. They were this patient was asking why couldn't ASH set up the visitors as witnesses to the process, to the notary process. And that was for us.
Other patients as witnesses. And I think they've done that at times,
Or visitors. No, visitors who come in.
Yeah. I mean, we could ask Kay, but I think the problem is they didn't let visitors come in for almost a year and a half.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So the problem was twofold. Like, they did let the notary come in, but they wouldn't let any of the other patients be witnesses. I can understand if they don't want to get staff involved for legal reasons or whatever, but they wouldn't even allow other patients who had driver's licenses to be witnesses. So you're having to pay the additional $75 or whatever so that they could provide a witness. And luckily they did, because some of these legal documents need to be turned around in a timely manner. And I just felt like the hospital just kind of leaves you in a bind and there's nothing you can really do about it. Luckily I have the means to pay for it, but I just feel for like some of the patients here that may not be able to.
This is Dee again. I don't understand how, another hospital employee, witnessing it has anything to do with what's in it. All you're doing is stating that the signature on the document is correct from the patient or whoever it's from. It has nothing to do with the content.
I think what's happened in the past is that there have been some shenanigans at hospitals in the past, maybe decades or years ago, where someone that was maybe losing maybe dementia or not in their right mind, or like my brother when he had a massive stroke, they will not witness because they could, you know, hospital staff could have them sign away their possessions, right? So I think it comes from a good place of not allowing caretakers to be witnesses on legal documents. But I think they could try to help make it easier on patients by allowing other patients to do it.
I thought it was just like in that situation you're talking about, I thought that was just because if it's a family member or somebody has some financial interest, they're not allowed to witness it.
I was going to say, that's why we have some texts that are notaries, because it means that I can sign the paperwork for a petition immediately right there and we can send it off. However, if we need an official notary that's not a caregiver for a patient, we have actual notaries that, like I said, they go to the different facilities. The only thing is, I will say, it's not always a super timely manner, but I think it's usually within 24 hours, sometimes less. That's why I don't understand why at Community Bridges we would have some notaries and that are like administrative. And at the state hospital, they can't have any administrative type notaries that aren't caregivers. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. We can just ask.
Yeah. I'm just letting you know that, you know, that it's not abnormal to have them in the psychiatric setting and in court ordered type situations. So.
Okay, Barb, anything else other than the notary that you took notes on?
Yeah, and this may, I don't know how much, I couldn't sign on. This may come from what you were talking about earlier about the staff in on conversations, and their patient had said that that they're documenting things that are violating their legal rights, and put down incident reports that may not be legitimate. Some things justifiably go in, like an assault goes in, but with incident reports, it set a patient back a level. So there was it was stated that the staff basically is holding patients back for progress, and that the incident reports are a lot like the game of telephone and heard incorrectly. And those incident reports are being misused, the patient says, in the PSRB. The staff said that there's different classifications of ER, but that's kind of hanging. There was another request to have the phone time extended from, I think it's currently 3 to 9, and if family is on the East Coast, it's difficult to be able to reach them, especially now with the 3-hour difference. And sometimes so many people want to use the phone that more time is needed for everybody to get to use the phone. And I put the initials AB person will ask nursing, and I'm blanking on who AB is right now.
Aaron Bowen, maybe. Well, anyway, I think. Yeah.
How could I do that?
Yeah. I think
how
that,
could I do that?
I think the bigger request after talking with several of the patients in the forum was that, you know, there's only so much time in their programming. And then they're just sitting in the day room, right? So their request, which is, I think, legitimate, why, you know, you let the TV stay on until, what is it, lights out at 9 or 10, whatever it is. They want to have,
lights out, our tea time is until 11. We were requesting that they open the phone lines from 3 p.m. to 9 p.m.
Yes.
Because they're only open from 3 to 5 and then again 7 to 9.
Yeah. And that made sense because they're not getting programmed, so it's not distracting from the therapy and everyone adequate time to talk to their loved ones and families and friends.
And the operators are there 24/7. Oh, I'm sorry, Lord.
Loosen that up. Yeah, no, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. And since the operators are there anyway, it didn't seem like they're there 24/7. An additional burden.
Yeah, I can tell you that sometimes I call Bobby, it takes me days to get through him because the phones are busy, like all the time, It's and because there's such a small amount of small window for people to call.
Right, and the hospital, like
it makes sense.
Each unit is built to about capacity, which is 20 patients, and 3 phone lines isn't sufficient. So we can get more phone usage time, then maybe we can alleviate some of the traffic. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. And I think, too, there was also discussion on closing the mall a lot because of staffing issues. And my patients were trying to come up with unique ways that they could go outside but also be safe and maybe do some inventive supervision of sharing staff. I don't know if they've made any changes on that front either, but that was being discussed.
They haven't. So they still are requiring that we have 3 staff out for a full mall. In addition, they haven't made any progress on the telephone either.
And the mall, one of the patients said that it's almost always shut down when the patients can use it. So that's going on with what you said, Mary.
That's true.
Yeah. Related to staffing, generally.
Yeah. Another patient on Swaro complained about the bathrooms being dirty and that they need to be cleaned more often, the trash needs to be emptied, there needs to be more toilet paper. And Aaron Bowen said housekeeping is a vendor and the staff rotates units. So if you have a good housekeeper that week, then no complaints. But then the next week, if you have a different one, they can not be doing a good job. And it's been difficult to get this staff. And then the PSRB reports are supposed to come to the every 22 months, but that's not happening. And it's been difficult to get them, although the patients can request them. Right now, the PSRB has 3 members, which isn't a quorum, so they can't meet. But the hospital, quote unquote, is still moving forward and filing things by deadline, unquote.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, too, on the one, they said if they want records, they can do a records request via Jackie. And when I asked about the PSRB membership, they do have enough. If there's if there's 2 members, then quorum's like 1, or 3 members, quorum's like 2. So they can meet quorum. It isn't, it's based on the number of members. But there's probably going to be other people appointed in the interim. I haven't checked lately to see if that's happened or not. And then we heard about eyeglass optometry. They're trying to get people in, and barbers are having a hard time getting in. But they thought maybe in a month or so, right?
And I just had, right, candidate, or they were going to select, or they did select a candidate, but it was going to be a month or so. And then I just had two other things. There was a request or question about if there could be additional female units, because there was only, I think, if I have it correct, Sago and Pinion, I think now.
That's right.
Accommodations could be made, and maybe Sycamore, Mojave. And then there was a request for reinstating, I think it was holiday photos.
Yes. Yeah, they said they were not able to take them and send them their families a picture this year, which was unfortunate. I think they said they'd look into that. And anything else from the forum, and then we can go on to the calls that we made.
I had a question mark next to food visits. I didn't write the content. And I don't remember what
the patients were asking about.
Next to food visits?
So the COVID mandates have been lifted. And so I think Aaron Boland said he was going to look into having food visits where the patients could eat, but the people providing the food or the visitors providing the food could not. And we haven't heard anything on that matter either.
If they bring food in, they've touched the food, what difference does it make who eats it?
Well, I think when they talked in the meeting, they were talking that they didn't want to bring COVID in, so they didn't want. We had a discussion that, well, couldn't they, you know, they monitor the visits anyway. Security will, you know, tell them right away to pull their mask back up, so they are being monitored. But they said they couldn't afford more staff to sit and monitor the visits. I recall. Anything else from the forum, and then we can move on. We had three calls, I think. If anyone was on the calls with me, do you want to go ahead and discuss some of the issues that we heard about?
Well, this is Alice. I unfortunately wasn't able to take notes, but it sounds to me like one of them, of course, is the health related, you know, from one of the patients. And that's been an ongoing issue since COVID, especially, but even before COVID, people getting to, you know, their doctor's appointments and different things that they need. So, Melissa, if you want to talk.
Sure, yeah. So that particular patient had, I guess, had part of a surgery, not the whole thing.
Right.
And they're being advised to kind of follow up and do some things to make a full surgery, I guess, successful. So we were just asking, I think, how the patient was going to get support for sort of those goals, right? To make that more successful. But then in addition to that, like you're saying, there was also some conflicts in where and how and when some of the medical follow-up was happening. I think there was between the different like PAs or doctors or different people, there was some of the direction was conflicting.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's something that certainly needs to get resolved. That patient also had some issues with mail, similar mm-hmm. as to what has been discussed. And they also brought up the increase in the cost of the like soda and the food out of the vending machines.
Yeah, very expensive now.
Mm-hmm.
It was like $2 and something for a pop, or $1.75. Yeah, it was high.
Yeah, it's like $1.75 for a soda and $1.50 for a bag of chips or something like that.
Aren't they provided snacks on the unit at all?
I think they are.
They have to be approved by dietary, from my understanding. This is Kay.
All right.
Okay. A couple other things this patient had was made a comment that the mall had been closed for 10 out of the 14 days for patients, you know, who were at certain levels. And they hadn't been out in like 10 days or something like that. A positive thing, the patient was informed previous to the patient call, and they really appreciated that because they were able to prepare for the call. So that was a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else on that patient, or shall I could go?
No, that was, I think that covered it really well on that patient.
So then another, the first one, like first kind of no complaints, things were going pretty well. But then in discussion, what started to come up was a little bit about the staffing. And again, we've talked about that before, but that, you know, there's not enough. And to be more specific, I think it's not so much the nurses that are short, but more of the tech shortages.
Mm-hmm.
That's been more significant. And also a concern about the days that the mall were closed. And like, I don't know if that's something that this committee wants to see if we can get data on that.
Yeah, we could ask to see how many days, day by day, are the malls closed for each of the units.
Mm-hmm.
I did like what I was hearing about how they were promoting people to BHT
mm-hmm.
and doing the training. And I thought that was really cool. You know, I'm seeing a lack of BHTs across the board, and I'm hearing through my network of different friends at different places in the Phoenix area that some places don't even allow hands-on. The place that I used to work, my friend said that some of the nurses are getting the, let's just say, the crap beat out of them. Mm-hmm. I know that it's happened in my organization more than once, as well as the techs. Somebody even had their face fractured not terribly long ago and is still undergoing surgeries for that. So it's a dangerous job, and I don't know what it's like at ASH, but I know that at our hospitals, I'm just going to be honest here, you know, with everybody who's listening, it is not easy to keep techs because they're the front line of fire, and they've got to protect us nurses. In my case, I'm the only nurse on the unit. And it's like they say, I'm the only one with access to, you know, being able to get control over a situation, and they try to really protect me. But it's not been good, and it's been getting worse the past couple of years. And with the changes in CPI, with some places not allowing holds and things like that, it's just free for all. So
when you were saying CPI?
CPI is where you're taught to do safe holds and safe restraints when necessary.
Yeah.
If it gets to a point where CPI is all talk, well, if somebody is in psychosis, that doesn't work.
Yeah.
And a safe hold is okay, you know, until you mm-hmm. can get control with some shots or whatever was needed.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so we're watching behavioral health techs walk out right, left, and center. So, saying. It's hard everywhere. Anyway, I'm finished with that.
We had a third person that we talked to.
Yeah, so that that was good. We were able to talk to that patient, although the patient did request that they were a little bit concerned, I think, about talking on the phone and that it might be easier to meet in person.
Mm-hmm.
They also, let's see, talked about, had a concern about staffing, being short staffed, and how that impacted patio time. Also talked about their team, their treatment team, and I guess I'll just paraphrase that. I think it's the patients feeling that the team could be more supportive. And definitely felt that there was some I guess missed direction or I don't know if retaliation is the right word, Lori. I'm trying to think of what the right word is.
It almost state that he felt that they tried to trigger him.
Yeah, that's a good word. Yeah. Yeah.
Which was concerning. And he thinks that his treatment team is not truthful to him. But I think from talking to this person a few months ago, I saw a lot of at least a little more clarity. Last time we spoke, it was everything's perfect, everything's right, I'm good. So at least I think this seemed to be progress, but not good that he feels that staff is trying to trigger him. That's a problem. Okay, anything else on our patient visits?
That's all I had.
Okay, our next one was, you know, we had discussion on regulations. Melissa is continuing to look at some of the codes because, and I mean, you'll say it more elegantly, but there is no statute or code for admin separation, right?
Well, there is a listing for administrative separation, but it does not, it's very vague and it doesn't describe any of the physical, physical requirements or conditions. It's just a paragraph. So it's hard for us to really understand, you know, how it's being used and what it should be.
Yeah, especially in light of what's going on in, you know, in the architectural world and Red Cross and other organizations kind of moving away from this.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, is there any way that we can step in and say that that needs to be elaborated on?
Melissa tried mightily.
Okay, I believe that, Melissa. I could see that. It just seems legally not okay to not have very specific things related to that, you know, as rule.
Right. I will say I think the one positive thing was I think we're at least all on the same page that it's not defined. Right. And that they had forwarded codes, but I think what surfaced was that, yes, there are a lot of codes related to it, but there's nothing that spells out what it should be or what it is meant to be.
I don't know.
I think we can move from there.
Yeah. Okay. And I think that we'll continue to monitor and see what, on a positive note,
yeah,
this isn't used often, right? So on the other hand, it's not used frequently, which I think is positive.
Now,
Alice, if you want to go over, remember we had allegations of retaliation when a patient talked to the IOC and then was kind of targeted and kind of used as a scapegoat for why privileges were removed for units, but you can discuss.
Yeah, I've got all my notes here. Let's see, I've got some dates, page numbers, things like that. The thing that is interesting is that throughout what I see here is no mood instability, cheerful in the workplace, excellent performance, attends twice as many therapeutic social interventions that are necessary, exceeding goals, things like gardening with peer, total social appropriate interactions. And then I see some things like patient was followed to his room by another patient saying he's going to kill him, and that they were monitoring the threat closely. But then one of the things that I think may have also sparked some of the retaliation based on changes in the unit is because this patient was pushing for specific things related to, what's my understanding is I think issues and concerns, you know, due to COVID and restrictions and things that, let's see, it says COVID restrictions. He wanted to have an IDTP meeting. And the notes led me to think Ash seemed upset. And the way that it was worded was that the questions and suggestions made it seem like the patient was entitled, which didn't, again, nonsense. In the end, you know, when it came to like the IDTP, it says things like patient agreed to the current IDTP. Let's see. Another thing that I thought was wrong, the request treatment team to provide patient with an alternative path to privilege progression suggests, again, ongoing difficulty with entitlement behavior. So they won't provide this patient's lawyer with a written response after they meet with this patient regarding treatment issues and concerns, blaming these things on behavior. Let's see, make sure I get this right. Oh, yeah, and I thought, why, you know, thinking of retaliatory things, you know, why at the top of one of the progress notes from this year does it say comments about the patient's other community contacts, such as 5 attorneys, different law firms, one lawyer going to patient staffing on a specific date, private evaluations. And then it said, you know, at one point, now the patient hasn't contacted a lawyer lately, then the patient has had no contact with the IOC. And I think it's something about the patient has not seen their private therapist. It was that was like a positive. Okay. It should not be a positive thing, and it shouldn't be charted that the patient has had no contact with the IOC or their lawyer lately or a private therapist or things like that. I just couldn't believe it. What's that doing there? And then, again, because, you know, the patient is expressing that the patient legitimately feels blame for some of the changes in the unit. And I guess there are some things that other patients were targeting this patient about, and he's not understanding it because it sounds like, but it's not clear. Some of this might even be hospital related, but it doesn't mean that staff can't point fingers, you know, even if it's not correct, you know, it's kind of retaliatory again. And maybe staff is mad that there were changes made that were positive for the patients and they just didn't want to deal with it. So one of the things I see at the end of each progress note, or several of them, that the barriers to release, personality traits of inflexibility, perfectionism, impression management. And then it doesn't say, why, what is the inflexibility, the fixed inflexibility? What is the perfectionism that's causing a problem? The impression management that's causing a problem. I don't see that anywhere in the chart. And yet all throughout the chart, when it gets to barriers as part of the note, this is the same barrier every time. And then, my computer closed down. There was another thing that said that the diagnoses that the patient had resolved and were in remission, and that's this year. Yet, my understanding is they've come up with other diagnoses, or in this case, it sounds like their diagnoses are related to the person's personality. And then there's other staff members, social workers, things that write about the patient has great insight about causes of problems, stress, anxiety, depression, perceptions of maladaptive thinking patterns and stresses, identifies ways to navigate negative external events. It goes into when a patient was congratulated on something that was a good achievement. And then there's something else that seems, again, retaliatory. Patient presents with frustration when doesn't receive desired outcome. And again, it's the same barriers to treatment are. So the doesn't receive desired outcome, this is what I'm deriving from all the things I read. And I read through these 160 pages twice, is that this is someone who advocates for self, and perfectionism is related to, you want, just like when you're completing a college degree, there's a certain amount of subjectivity that goes into professor grading and things like that. You want to make sure that you're meeting to exceeding your goals. And if there are things that, are frustrating, and you're not getting the desired outcome, and yet you are doing everything under the sun, and it's clear in this chart that this patient is, I would meet it. I would be very, very frustrated. And so that seems to me to be a normal reaction. And again, they're not defining the frustration as something in particular. I would say that if it was presents with frustration when doesn't receive desired outcome, I would say, why? You know, the what happened? You know, why is this frustration negative? And then more about feeling targeted, and this was just a few months ago, again, for the changes on the unit, wants lawyer to notify treatment team of staff concerns, of feeling targeted or blamed for recent changes in unit rules, felt uncomfortable bringing it up to the treatment team due to feels team were blaming this patient for the changes. Mm-hmm. Asked about it by writer, says patient said, following legal advice. And then the writer told patient in this chart, it appears passive aggressive when you utilize others rather than directly addressing the concerns. Okay.
That's so the fact that they talk to a lawyer or the IOC, then they are getting retribution. They're saying, talk to us and only us.
Mm-hmm.
And they're noting, and we were told that. So I think we have established that they are retaliating.
I've got more written down. I have page numbers written down. That's why I went through it twice. Because the first time around, you know, you see things. The second time around, you see more. So, yeah, I've got several other things here. It's, you know, it's feels attacked when, you know, I'll end this with my last note. Feels attacked when states that he feels attacked or that patient stands up for self in the chart and they label it as inability to tolerate constructive feedback. And multiple times it says, again, you need to, you know, directly speak to people, directly speak to the treatment team. Otherwise, again, passive aggressive.
Hmm. Well, I think that thanks to your hard work, you have established that there was retaliation after talking to the IOC, even though we were told that most staff don't know, but we were told about this situation that right after they mentioned something on an IOC public forum, by mm-hmm. the next day they were being targeted and every rule changes were being put in place, kind of blamed on him when really the ultimate reason was a lack of staffing, and that's a administration issue, not a patient issue, for saying they don't feel safe.
Why would anything about speaking or not speaking to the lawyer
IOC,
or IOC in particular, why would that be in the chart?
Yeah. Well, thank you, Alice. I think we have established that we have a troubling pattern. Others, any thoughts on this? Well, I mean, I'm happy because often when there are allegations, we can't substantiate them. But mm-hmm. due to Alice's diligence, she was able to show there's a pattern. Which, and you'll be happy to note that there's legislation moving through right now that's going to add specific languages that patients cannot be retaliated against, nor their families, for engaging or interacting with the IOC.
My question on that, though, is, but how do we prove mm-hmm. that there is no retaliation? And this is so tricky.
Uh-huh. Yeah, because we can only go by what they document, right? But if a patient says, we talked to you guys, and now all of a sudden I have X, Y, and Z, mm-hmm. And there aren't any troubling behaviors, that, like they didn't hit staff or try to elope or, you know, it was just that. We can always bring it up.
Yeah, do the best that we can do.
So we get new audio video cameras.
We finally got them?
No, I said until.
I thought you said we got them. God, I got excited.
I wish. Okay, so we want to move on to, let's see, where are we? Any new business? Like I said, legislation, there's a lot of bills going through that have to do with portions of ASH, whether it's the oversight committee or it's the agency that governs and licenses them. So there are a lot of bills going through. Hopefully they'll make it into law. But those that are interested, you can always go on to azlaw.gov and look them up. Okay, so as far as any incident and accident reports, let me look real quick. On this one, Natalie asked 2022-0440, and it was a assault that led to police coming on site. It was assault patient on patient, and they wanted to, the officers wanted to review footage, and it notes in here that they couldn't because all five cameras in the lobby failed. It's like epic failure. I just thought, you know, we really need to get these cameras replaced. Let me look at this one. This one is Ash 2022-0484. And again, patient was refusing misdirection. And the behavior started to escalate. And again, they were, it escalated into a code gray, and officers were attempting to de-escalate and pull it away. Trying to read. Oh, the person that was trying to interfere in the de-escalation, I guess didn't follow, I think, all the correct procedures. And they said the fact that the person hesitated could have been a disastrous outcome because they hesitated to put the person that was escalating in a hold. And the good thing is after camera review, the nurse said that they recommended that that patient attend a refresher course on NVC. Staff and patients. So again, while no one likes restraints and holds, if it's going to ultimately prevent an altercation or real injury, you're supposed to do it. Let me see if I have anything else here. I had just a, and I don't know how you handle this. Maybe Alex will have some insight. So this is Ash 2022-0579, and this is self injury. Patient really trying to take his eye out, or the person trying to take their eye out with a stick, and they took care of it, and the patient was sent to the emergency room, and that was at like 1:45, and then later that day, that was at 1345, later that day, same patient at 1800, did it again, significantly. So they had to go back to the ER, and I don't know how you prevent that. And what I saw later on in the reports that it happened yet again, and I know that seems like they're trying because they have a they must have some type of helmet that protects the eyes. But 2 or 3 days later, the patient was again trying to get at their eyes again, and they were trying to make sure they called the code to try to prevent self-injury. I don't know what you do. It just was unusual for me.
Well, usually in those cases, the patient will get a one-to-one, but I know that, you know, in a place as big as Ash and with the staffing issues, it's not always that easy. But there are certain regulations with one-to-one, be within an arm's length and things, make sure if they're line of sight, if you get to a point where you decide, okay, we'll take off the one-to-one, maybe a day later, make them line of sight. That means watching the patient so that there's no sort of object that can harm them within their reach. Unfortunately, it's not always that easy. And sometimes they use their hands or their nails.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, you know, that's when you have the sitter, you know, the one-to-one. And sometimes, you know, calming shots, you know, calming medications or, you know, by mouth, if they want to take it by mouth or a shot. That's the way that I handle it. And so far, knock on wood, it's been that I haven't had to send anyone to the ER for self-injuring on my shift, but that's just luck.
Yeah. And with this, there are lots of times in the incident accident on civil primarily, where most everything happens. There are lots of people on one-to-one or COS or LOS, but nothing on this patient, COS or LOS.
Oh, I wonder why. Just taking your eye out. That's big.
Yeah. So maybe we can ask, why isn't this patient on one-to-one and, you know, with that kind of grave attempts to injure themselves?
Oh, wow. Or at least once you feel they're a little bit out of the woods, line of sight all the time. Basically.
So if I make that motion, does someone want to second it?
Alice will second it.
And Natalie, that was 0638 was the last one. Okay. Next one, we had Ash 2022-0687. This is code gray, but just kind of showing what Alice is saying. There is a lot of still violence against roll call for the last one. Oh, that's right. All in favor of that, of us asking about the one-on-one for the
aye.
Aye.
Thank you, Natalie, for keeping me honest. Okay. And the staff on this one, 0687, was just punched many times in the face during just a code. So it is a hard job.
Yeah.
They did contact, they were injured enough to contact their EAP line. They contacted them. Let me see this one. This one is Ash 2022-0706, and it was a witnessed fall. Patient fell. They tried to help the patient slowly get back, but they tried to catch, and he did not, or the person did not hit their head. Vital signs, let's see, blood pressure 110 over 58, pulse 98, temp 96.4, respiratory 16, blood sugar 96, not in any distress. When the patient came from the room, gait was very unsteady, stooping, very confused, speech not clear, cannot follow directions. Patient was provided a wheelchair, informed the doc, and then they wanted to continue and monitor the patient. They had no visible injuries. They were encouraged to drink fluids. They continued to be very confused and unsteady. They informed the doctor again, and they sent the person to Valleywise for change in mental status. Nurse report given. They were sent to Valleywise. Now, I don't know if this is the sentinel event that happened. No, it probably isn't, because there was a recent death, but it was just within the last week. So this couldn't be it, because this was February 19th. But at least they monitored and they got him over to Valleywise, so that's good. Now we have, let's see, I'm trying to see if I have anything else of note. Oh, the assault perpetrator and outlier report again, as usual. It was, you know, a handful of people that get most of the assault and most of the seclusion and restraint. I think on seclusion and restraint, it was 5 people that had at least almost 50%, and it was 5 people that had most of the assaults, about 50%. And with that, I told you about the Sentinel event that the hospital administration called me. I think it was like, I'd say late last week, that a patient presented in the morning and had some changes. So they sent the patient over to Valleywise, and the patient expired while waiting for a bed over there. And we'll have more details next month because it didn't come in this month's reports. But we did have unexpected death. They are doing an autopsy. And the questions I asked, since Chuck is on the committee and it wouldn't break open meeting law for me to ask him a question, I asked him, and he said, how did they know? What were they seeing? What made them send them to the ER? So I did ask a few questions. We don't have the full report, but there was a change in level of consciousness, confusion, kind of not making sense and not able to follow directions. And that's what led to them getting sent to Valleywise. And let's see, legislation we talked about. Any new business before we go to call to the public? Did I forget anything we were supposed to talk about?
Well, the other thing that I think that is worth noting that you actually mentioned, but more specifically the bill that has to do with ASH and the administration of ASH attending IOC meetings, as well as some other things passed through out of committee yesterday with, I believe, unanimous consent.
Yes.
Is it 1444, was it?
Yes, yes. And then bill number SB 1716, which is Gowan's bill, is going to be heard again to another committee on Monday at 2:00 p.m. And for those that don't know, if you don't go down to the Capitol, you can always watch it on azledge.gov. You can watch live proceedings if you look at the bill and see which calendar they're on, whether it's on Health and Human Services or which committee it's going through.
And you can actually support or not support a particular bill.
Yeah, and make comments.
If you're interested in that, we can walk you how to do that. And you don't have to go down. You can do it over
online. Okay, so without further ado, we can open it up to public comment. Again, if you're calling in from the public, if you want to remain anonymous, you can. If you want your name in the minutes, you can just say you want your name in the minutes. And just for time's sake, we'll limit it to 3 minutes a person. So would anyone like to speak from the public?
Hello, does this mean the patient or?
Yes.
Hi, my name is Isaac Contreras. It's been a while since I've really called. I know the IOC came and did a walkthrough the other day to what my area is. Now, I'm not sure exactly what it is that they say that I do, and I would like my name on there, but I have audio recordings, video recordings. I have tons of things that contradicts everything that they say that I allegedly did and why I did things. Anytime I stand up or just say something for myself, these people, retaliation is a normal thing. I have not been like, they don't let me, I haven't even been able to go to patio. and I don't know why. I haven't been able to go to patio, and I barely had got some, I guess you could say, furniture, but it was the used things that they no longer use here, like two sofas or them plastic ones, the brown ones. I have to use those as tables. So I had a white blanket over it. Housekeeping has not, if you look at the chart, housekeeping has not came into my area to clean my room. My bathroom, my area is disgusting. It's not that I'm just not able to keep it in shape. It's just like, I'm just it's just frustrating being in seclusion. I can't, like, I have honestly not seen the sun, and that there does bother me. So if I don't understand why we're supposed to be held so accountable for any things that we do, but yet Dr. Bowen, Dr. Woods, and the rest of the people, they get to do what they want. They think they're higher than the law, and they get to punish us any way they feel fit. And then they write whatever they want to write. Like Dr. Bowen came and laughed at me on the front door, and you know, about 3 days ago, and that wasn't right. But why are we always being held accountable for things that we really don't even do, but they say we do? And how are they able to break the law, mistreat us? Like, I haven't had a code gray or even broken anything, and I'm still in administration separation. Like, I'm not understanding, like, how is this happening? Do a lot of people not really know about it? I mean, and I'm not just talking about me. I'm talking about the whole thing that happens here in Ash. It's like the staff members is keeping everything a secret. They cover up for each other. So in reality, we don't have nobody. And once we're in here, we don't have nobody to help us out, to speak for us, to stand up for us. It's always them against us. And if you look at the grievance things, like we never win the grievance. And I'm sorry, I think my 3 minutes is up. And yeah, so it's retaliation. And thank you.
Thank you, Isaac. And remember, for all patients, we cannot respond to public comment. So.
Oh, can I request a visit?
Patients can request visits.
No, from the IOC?
Yes. I mean, I'm saying that to everyone. I'm not saying that to you. Patients can request visits.
Okay. Thank you.
Hi, this is Timothy Verbrisco from Pinion. I'm on the shuffle, so it's hard to remember which unit I'm on all the time. I asked them, I met with part of my team the other day, yesterday actually, and I asked them, I told them, you guys have won, the hospital has, you know, you guys are, you have the rules, you've won, you've proven your point, you made your point, please take me off the shuffle, this is too hard on me, I'm stressed out. I'm tired of being moved every 4 months. Could you please just let me alone? They kind of chuckled, and I don't know what's going to happen. I'm afraid to get close to anyone anymore due to this, because they've moved another one of my peers to another unit week or so ago, because we're hanging out too much and having a good time. And in the past, they've told this peer to stay away from me because Tim is just going to get you in trouble and he's bad news. Mail is missing. It's not making it to our destination that we're sending it to. I mailed something on my mom mailed something on February 24th to me from Van Buren Street, and it shouldn't take all that long to get here, and I still haven't got it. another one of my peers right next to me, he mailed something 4 weeks ago to Washington, and it's not made it yet.
No, to New Mexico.
To New Mexico. I had a friend of mine mail something because I was afraid of them continuing to screw with my mail. Sent it to my mom's house under a different name, and it never made it to the house. The doctor, my PA, refuses to come see me anymore, and I had surgery to put in a suprapubic catheter. That went okay. I called her a couple names after she came and seen me because she was acting a fool, antagonizing me and stuff. I did ask her for one or two extra pain pills for the 3 or 4 days I'm going to be healing up for, and then extra pain. She refused to give them to me. She said, no, you're already on enough. My mom was accused of extorting me. When we went to the hospital Sunday night, a couple weekends ago, right after the surgery, my catheter got clogged with a blood clot. They said that she passed me something. So they searched me. They searched my walker, my hoodie. They didn't find anything. They said, and I told them, well, you can cavity search me when we get back. I don't have nothing. So the hospital, Valley Wise, refused to let her in the ER. Adult Protective Services called me 2 days later on Tuesday and said that they were afraid that my mom was extorting me. That's kind of funny because she's my guardian. She has everything I own. What's she extorting me for? My blood?
Do you want your name in the meeting minutes?
Oh, most definitely. I went outside yesterday. I'm the only one on 1 to 5. I know of 2 other peers that are on 1 to 5 status. Mm-hmm. That makes 3 out of the whole hospital, besides people that are on pinion, which really don't come out, but I only get associated with 2 of my peers if they come out. All the other people are. So that's all I have to say. I'm echoing really bad.
It's Dr. Potts.
No, it wasn't Dr. Potts.
No, he just said right now.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, this is time for us now?
Yes.
Yeah, hi, this is Mr. Charles Edsmar on Pinion. I'm with the chaplain.
Right now, wait a second, we're getting a echo, so to make sure
make
that
sure
we can
that
hear you.
Get closer, does it help?
No, somebody's got their phone off mute. No, you gotta get closer, please, so.
I'm on the second chaplain search team. We're looking for a bilingual. Women are welcome to apply. We're looking for a Catholic. We missed Jim Cascio, but he refused to groom a successor. My phone numbers are 928-351-7679. My Colorado number is 970-305-5055. Those are both voicemails. One can leave messages 24/7 on those. I'm also here at 501 North 24th Street, Phoenix, 85008. Edmark is spelled E-D-M-A-R-K. Please pray for our success. We're thinking about maybe providing a reward. And you please call anytime or write Charles Edmar. Thank you for your time, everyone. Continued successes.
Thank you. Charles, did you want your name in the minutes?
Of course, yes. Thank you.
Anyone else from the public?
Yes, hi.
This is Deborah. Go ahead.
No, it's okay. Go ahead, Deborah. I'll go after you.
This is Deborah Bykowski.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to acknowledge the IOC meeting that Maria, which is the PA of my son, has not followed the orders from the surgeries and from the specialist, numerous specialists, their orders. She does not follow them. She goes according to what she says. This pubic catheter that was inserted, the surgeon came in before the surgery and said that they wanted to see him once a month. Well, the nurse practitioner says, well, you're going to be seen once every 3 months. Well, he's always having problems already with blood clots in the urinal bag. So I assume that she should follow what the surgeons say that did the surgery rather than her own decisions on what she feels is right. That's all I had to say. Another thing, the what are those people? Adult Protective Services continue to call and all they want to do is get me for extortion, which is not true. And so, and the hospital called them on me. That's all I have to say.
Okay. Deborah, do you want your name in the minutes?
Sure.
Okay. Summer?
Yes, hi. This is Summer Walter, and I'm okay with being in the minutes with my name in the minutes. I am the guardian of my brother, who's a patient on the civil side. And I will say, of course, there is an incredibly large staffing shortage. Sometimes visitations have not been able to take place because they don't have the staff to supervise the visitations. I have seen where the security staff, who I don't feel is trained appropriately to deal with our loved ones, is having to man the units as well. I've witnessed techs and or nurses repeatedly being on their phones and not paying attention. I have heard through phone calls with my brother of the nursing staff being completely disrespectful to my brother, making comments about his weight, and even making comments to him like, go ahead, call your sister, hide behind your sister. They 100% antagonize him and, you know, will make comments just to get him fired up. And they, of course, when it's addressed at staffings, they act like, oh, we don't know where this is coming from. And then try to say, you know, we never said that, you know, Darren must be paranoid and making this up. And I have requested staffings with the treatment team because they hold strong to their 15-minute IDTP meetings. And the last meeting I requested with them was over 2 weeks ago, and they have yet to respond to me. I sent a follow-up email requesting when this meeting will be taking place so we can discuss concerns. as my brother's behavior sometimes is very aggressive and violent, and he's having more incidents, and it's just like radio silence. There's no transparency. They will not tell me if they've made med changes or adjustments, and it's incredibly frustrating. You know, they hide behind we're the COT, we make all the decisions, and basically try to pretend like I have no part of, you know, my brother's wellness, even though I am his legal guardian. And that's all I have to say. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Summer. Do we have anyone else out there from the public?
Yeah, I'd like to speak.
Okay. Would you like your name in the record or no?
No, I'm going to stay unanimous. Okay. Just a quick statement here. This hospital has a bully mentality, and it is very clear that the residents here all live in fear. They need to be held accountable, especially from just hearing from what's going on today. The living situation of some of the residents, it is disgusting. And again, having to hear that these people are constantly living in fear because they fear retaliation from these from the police here. There needs to be some form of action against them. Hearing this time after time, they have friends and family out there who obviously we care about these people. And it is truly traumatizing for us to hear these things. There needs to be something put in place where they are held accountable for their actions. And that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have anyone else on the call? Public comment?
Hi, this is Timber Briscoe again. One quick second. My mother has been called on Adult Protective Services on extortion from about 8 different people, supposedly. They all have wrote letters of character reference and thanks for Ms. Bykowski for all that she's done for them, how their families wouldn't help them, and she was the only one that would help them. Thank you for the clothes. I couldn't afford them. Just my mom's very helpful and big-hearted. I don't understand how one day they can be a security guard, and then 24 hours later they come to work, and then they're all of a sudden a BHT. What classes did they take in that 24-hour period? Did they learn everything about being a behavioral health tech? That should be, you don't even have to have a high school diploma to work here. You don't even have to be a U.S. citizen to work here. I don't know what to say. It's just ludicrous, and I live in fear of retaliation every day, but I really don't care anymore. They can do what they want. I'm stuck here, and I'm going to make them earn their dollar every day that they're here.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, we don't have executive session, but I do. Let's see if I may have a conflict next month. I have to check. If I do have, then I may have a trustee event. If I do, I will see if anyone else would like to chair next month. Don't everyone grab it at once. Only one of you can. No, but if...
Was that a question?
It was an opportunity. No, so...
Okay.
But I may... I think I have a conflict. I will validate, and if so, I'll send it out to the IOC committee and see who would like to chair. Okay? With that, can we motion? The other thing is if no one wants to chair, we could move it to a Wednesday. But other than that, I think that Thursday, I think I'm out. Okay, with that, motion to adjourn?
Motion.
Okay.
Second.
Okay.
It's Melissa.
Okay, Melissa, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
I think Alice motioned.
Excuse me?
Alice, did you motion? Or Kay?
I motioned and I said yes.
Okay. And thank you for all the hard work. I'm glad finally we were able to substantiate some claims.
Oh, I agree. That was a godsend.
Okay. Thanks, everyone. Be safe. And we'll talk soon for the subcommittee. I'll send something out.
Great.
Thank you. And thank you for your patience, Larry, with us and all the support. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Night. Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.